We're going to talk about the book of Obadiah today. We probably will not finish it today, but hopefully we'll get a good start and we'll be able to finish it next time. Obadiah is a really interesting book. It's the shortest book in the Bible, in the Old Testament. Shortest book in the Old Testament. Third John's the shortest. It's the shortest book in the Old Testament. However, it's a book about Edom. It's a book about the ruin of Edom, the reasons for the ruin, and the restoration of Israel with retribution to Edom. So it's a book about Edom. Now, who was Edom? Esau's family. Who was Esau? Jacob's brother. And I see what's being portrayed in the book of Obadiah as the result of a feud between Esau and Jacob. Now, just briefly rehearse what was happening. And by the way, for those out in CD land, we gave a quiz to the students this morning on both Joel and Amos. And so now we're going into the book of Obadiah for you to hear and listen. I do have PowerPoint on this one, which means I will try to describe what I'm showing on the screen if I can only recall it, because I know you only have audio out in CD land. So anyway, I'll try to keep that going for you. But Obadiah is a book about what happened between Esau and Jacob. And it can show you how long-standing feuds and difficulties can be. To illustrate this, I want to show you what happened in... I think this will work. First of all, I'll just give you a brief outline of the book. Overview, the name Obadiah means worshiper of Yahweh. Worshiper of Yahweh. The date is either 800 or 400. It's either dated early or late. It's one of those books that we really don't know, and the commentators aren't sure whether it was written in the time of Jeroboam II in the Golden Age of Israel or whether it was written later on. But the theme of the book is the burden on Edom and the day of the Lord. The burden on Edom, a pronouncement against the peoples of Edom. Who is Edom? According to our Bible reading program, it talks about Edom possibly being the Amalekites. Down at the bottom it says, who is Edom today? Greeks and Romans called the area Idumea. That's around Jordan, around the city of Petra. It says, one of Esau's grandsons and a tribal chief was Amalek, that's in Genesis 36, 10 to 16, who became the father of the Amalekites. Some rabbinical schools in Israel teach that the Palestinian Arabs, the most fervent adversaries of modern Israel, are Amalekites. So one interpretation is Edom are the peoples who live in the area that used to be Edom, right around Jerusalem. Another interpretation is people who are in Turkey, because Edom, Idumea and that area, they have Timon and some of those areas. Some say they could even be settled in Syria, as well as settled up into Iraq. The city of Basra, is also known as Bozra. Well, it's the peoples where they are, Turkey, some peoples in Syria, but many of them, the Amalekites, right in and around the Palestinian Jews, or Palestinian Arabs. Palestinian Arabs would be the ones who would be likely the most fervent to come against Israel. So, it says, identification of Palestinians becomes clearer from the reading of Obadiah 19. It's speaking of territories. For those that control particular territories in the Holy Land will come to possess additional areas. The areas taken back are now populated by Palestinians, thus apparently identifying Palestinians as Edomites. So they're saying the ones who are in and around that area, the Palestinian Arabs, are the ones who will be the ones coming against them at the end. It says they may be found elsewhere as well. Talks about a text from ancient city of Ugarit on the northern Syrian coast mentions the well-watered land of Edom, which was evidently in some proximity, so in that vicinity. Perhaps that is why we find a city of Basra in Iraq, possibly a slight variation from the Edomite city of Bozra. People do tend to carry on, like, what did they name New York City? New Amsterdam, right? Named New Amsterdam, and a number of the cities that were on the East Coast named after cities in England. Goes on to talk about the Edomite wandering. Some say the Edomites had wandered. The chief tribe of Edom was Temon, named after Esau's eldest grandson. Talks about Turkestan, Persia, became known as the land of Temani. So it seems like they have gone abroad. Also the Turks, you have the Ottoman, Ottoman. Some thought that that might be it too. So trying to identify them, they'll be in and around Israel, and they will definitely be an enemy of Israel. That came from the Bible reading program, February 2003 edition. Let's see. So the book talks about the ruin for Edom, the reasons for the ruin, and the restoration of Israel, retribution to Edom. I covered that. Miscellaneous information about the book, city of Petra is described and discussed. So he talks about, you think you're so strong, and you'll see where Petra is in a moment. There's no personal history of Obadiah. Message was more important than the messenger. And you see what is the result, the final result of the feuding between Esau and Jacob. Now you wonder, how can this last? How can people be so mad at each other? You know, and in fact, Esau forgave his brother, didn't he? Remember, Jacob put all the more expendable ones in the front, and he kept his wife, the wife that he loved, and Joseph in the back, and he was prepared for them to start slaughtering and hope they get tired swinging their swords by the time they got to the ones he loved the most. And when Esau came, he ran over and hugged his brother and welcomed him back when he had to go through his land. So I thought that was really interesting, because Esau was clearly in a power position then. After he had said, after Dad dies, I'll kill Jacob because of Jacob's conniving ways. I'll kill him when he comes back, whenever I get the chance to see him. Jacob was fully aware of that when he returned, but he was forgiven. But what do you think Esau probably told his children? Watch out for Uncle Jacob. He's a conniver. He stole this from me. He took that from me. He pretended. Watch him. He'll steal you blind. Watch him. He'll take away things from you. What do you think he taught his kids? I think that's what he taught them. And you'll see that feud through the scriptures in a moment running throughout the time. This is the shortest book in the Old Testament. Now, let's take a modern example today to say, why would you ever think that a feud could last? The Hatfields and the McCoys, and by the way, we had a McCoy come to Ambassador College, and that McCoy told me that his granddad shot a Hatfield just because he was a Hatfield. He didn't even know him. He just, you're a Hatfield, I kill you. Great-granddad or whatever killed a Hatfield just because he was a Hatfield. The guy who came to Ambassador was a McCoy. I stayed away from him, lest I be mistaken for a McCoy, too. Hatfields and the McCoy is a real story. Let me read to you just briefly. I'm going to give you the skinny of it. There on this left side, you see the Hatfield clan. On the right side, you see some of the McCoys. They talk about Devil Anse. They called him, his name was Anse, A-N-S-E. They called him Devil Anse, I would imagine, because he was devilish. But he's on the left side in the front row. And he was more personable than Randall McCoy, and I'll show you a picture of him in a moment. There you see a close-up of Devil Anse Hatfield and old Randall McCoy. His name was Randolph, but they called him Randall, R-A-N-E-L or R-A-N apostrophe L, Randolph McCoy. They were the two clan leaders. Interestingly enough, neither of them died in the feud, but others did. Devil Hatfield, the one on the left from West Virginia, was more personable than Randall McCoy on the right, who was from Kentucky, both real close, just across the border. Both had prolific families, 13 and 16 children, one 13, the other 16. in 1865, a brother of Randall McCoy, the one on the right, was killed for joining the Union Army by the Hatfields. The Hatfields said, hey, what's he doing joining the Army? He's from West Virginia, and that's southern West Virginia. He's joining the Union Army. They killed him. Then there were 13 years of peace, so they kind of just bided their time. In 1878, Randall McCoy on the right accused a Hatfield of stealing his pig. Court was held. Guess who was on the jury? 6 McCoys and 6 Hatfields. But a witness who was a relative of the Hatfields on the left came and swayed the jury. So the verdict was in favor of Hatfield. So Devil Ants got off from whatever the accusation of stealing a pig. However, the McCoys killed the witness who swayed the court, who was a relative of the Hatfields. A McCoy stood trial for that and was acquitted. Again, maybe 6-6, deadlock jury. Enmity brewed between the two clans. There were another 3 years passed, and the next issue came about. And that's when Rosanna McCoy on the left fell prey to the amorous ways of John's, probably Johnson is his real name, but John's Hatfield. John's Hatfield was a real ladies' man. And Rosanna was a little bit older than he was, and she was a McCoy. Now, she shouldn't have been messing with the Hatfields, but the two of them got together. They had a love affair, and she became pregnant. And obviously, it was not immediately known that she was pregnant, because their love affair was kind of in a private place where nobody knew to start with. But when her father found out, John's was marked for death. John's was captured by the McCoy boys and was going to be taken to be put to death. And Rosanna jumped on her horse and ran and got help from the opposing side, the Hatfields, because she was a McCoy, and they stopped it. After that time, Rosanna was rejected by her family. But when she went to live with to try to make more time with John's, he didn't want anything to do with her. So here she's pregnant with his child, and she's rejected by her family, and she's kind of rejected by his family. So she was going a little bit crazy during this time. The McCoys then, in 1882, 1 year later, stab a Hatfield to death and shoot him in the back. They not only stab him, and then they shoot him in the back. 3 days later, those 3 McCoy boys were put before a firing squad and killed. Firing squad, by the way, of the Hatfields. 9 years go by, 1891, and the feud ended. I mean, this is not that. The feud ended in 1891. They moved to Edom, and it was all over. I'm showing a map of Edom. By the way, for those in CD land, I've been showing pictures of the McCoys and the Hatfields. The feud ended in 1891, but all in all, 13 people from both families had been killed. Randall McCoy lived till his 80s and died in 1914. He was the head of the McCoy group. And Devil Ants Hatfield died in 1921, also in his 80s, of pneumonia. Rosanna never did marry Johns Hatfield, and the child that she had died at a very young age of measles or pneumonia, whatever. And then Johns had married her cousin, a lot younger than her instead, but apparently this Johns kept on cheating on even her cousin. Rosanna never recovered from that, became a nursemaid aunt to her family until her death. So it's a tragic story from the standpoint of her. But she and Johns were the ones that really provoked this feud, in addition to the pig, in addition to the shooting of the fellow who joined the Union Army. All right, let's take a look at this map. Now you see the Middle East. You see Edom, where it's located, right near Judah. And I'll show you Moab, Ammon, that whole area is where Jordan is, where Mr. Register is flying to today. Note the proximity of Judah to Edom. You'll see it on the right side. Edom and Judah, underlined. Close they are. And then the same way on this side, Edom and Judah. And it also talks about Amalek being down in that area as well. There you see Petra. Petra is right in that area of Edom. How many of you have been to Petra? Only two of us. If you ever get a chance to go, and I don't know if you're going to Israel during the spring break or if they ever hold a Feast of Tabernacles. If you're going this spring break, one thing I would recommend you buy, a bomb detector and a flak jacket. No, I'm teasing you. So. But I'll tell you, when we were over there, I was over there in 83. It was very shortly after the war in 81. They still had tanks patrolling. When we went up toward northern Israel, there were tanks going up and down the Golan Heights. Remember, they had taken over part of that territory up there from the Syrians, and they had Syrians up on the hill. And they still had bombs and mines in the bombs, unexploded bombs and rockets in the area, in the fields, in the off the main roads. And they told us, do not go running at night. Don't go off running cross-country. Stay on the main streets if you're going to run. And every so often, while we were traveling, we would hear a bomb go off. So it was either a mine or a bomb that finally was detonated. They were still going off when we were there. So I would say be careful if you go. Be careful. Just be aware. There you see Petra. Beautiful, beautiful area to see. I don't know if I would want to live there. I don't know if I would want to spend place of safety there. But wherever God decides, whether we're protected here under the rock, wherever it will be that God will protect you, God promises protection. Asia Minor, again, some think because its proximity to the Middle East, you see there's a narrow way there for travel. And again, airplanes can right go over that, but if you just use it as the information they had back then, would they constrict the way for Israel? Now, we do know Turkey played a role in the invasion of Iraq. Turkey would not allow U.S. troops to invade Iraq from their territory. They were all planning to go in that way, and Turkey said no. What's that? And they wouldn't let them go in. Yeah. And will they block the way for Israelites in the future? Will they block the way for spiritual Israelites? What will they do? We don't know what that scripture means, whether it was just historical or whether it has a fulfillment. But certainly they did block the way for modern, as we understand, modern Israel, or who they are in prophecy, Israel in prophecy, as they did block the way. So they're close in the Middle East. I once flew from Istanbul to Amman, Jordan. Can you use the mic so it's on?
I was just wondering, weren't the Turks the ones that kind of like rescued our forces in Somalia in like the early 90s?
Probably. I don't recall that. Wasn't just the Turks. Okay. So it's not, I'm not saying they're against us at all times or against that, but what will the fulfillment be? We will see as we go through. Background. Genesis 25, verses 24 to 34. Their births and birthright. Remember, Esau was the firstborn. Jacob came out grabbing his foot and where he could trip him up. And the birthright promise after he was the one was loved by Isaac, and the other one was loved by Rebekah. So Esau was loved by Isaac, and Jacob was loved by Rebekah. Not a good thing to do. not a good thing for children to say, Dad loves me more than he loves you. Or I'm Dad's pet and you're not. Ha ha. It's not good. But, you know, Esau was loved by his father, Isaac, because Esau was a hunter of the field. As I think I mentioned in the sermon, you don't brag on your kids being able to dust coffee tables. You know, it's not something that maybe you brag on your daughter, but you don't brag on your son. My son can really dust a coffee table. You know, it doesn't really do much for a dad. But you say, my son went out and he gets wild game and he brings them in and this food that I really love. And you recall that Jacob was able to steal the birthright or connive and get the birthright from great white hunter Esau, who could not even find food in the field. Unusual, because most people, as I understand it, if you're a camper, you know certain vegetation you can actually eat that is edible out in the field. But he came back, he was hungry so much he was about to die, and he sold his birthright for some lentil soup. Genesis 27, verse 41, after the final blessing is taken by Jacob, Esau hates Jacob. He says, I'm going to kill him. And it's overheard by a servant. After Jacob fled to Uncle Laban, the Syrian, by the way, he returns through the land of Esau, and Esau, with his mighty men, forgave Jacob. That's found in Genesis 33, verses 1 to 4. Genesis 33, verses 1 to 4. Genesis 36, we find the family of Esau, in which many of the different names that we already rehearsed, Timon and some of those, are mentioned. Numbers 20, verse 19. Numbers 20, verse 19 is an interesting verse. Because in this case, Edom does not permit Israel or Jacob's descendants to pass through. Numbers 20, 19. Edom said to him, this is verse 18, you shall not pass by me, lest I come out against you with a sword. This is after the patriarchs had made up years before. And the children of Israel said to him, we will go by the highway, and if I and my cattle drink of your water, and I'll pay you for it. You know, we're not going to try to take anything. We'll keep on the straight and narrow. We'll go the way that's of the path. We won't wander from the paths. And if we have to take any water, we'll pay you for it. I will only, without doing anything else, go through on my feet. We're not going to stop. We're not going to camp. We're not going to take anything. Verse 20, and he said, you shall not go through. And Edom came out against him with much people and with a strong hand. Thus Edom refused to give Israel passage through his border. Wherefore, for that reason, Israel turned away from him. So it wouldn't let them go through, blocked the way. Numbers 20, verses 19 through 21. Ezekiel 35, verses 5 and 6. Ezekiel 35, verses 5 and 6, we see this hatred still mentioned. This is years later, years and years later. Ezekiel chapter 35, verses 5 and 6, we read this, because you have had a perpetual hatred and have shed the blood of the children of Israel by the force of the sword in the time of their calamity, in the time that their iniquity had an end. Therefore, as I live, says the Lord God, I will prepare you to blood, and blood shall pursue you. He says, do you not hate blood? Even blood shall pursue you because of what you have done. Verse 15. As you did rejoice at the inheritance of the house of Israel, because it was desolate, so will I do to you. You shall be desolate, O Mount Seir, and all in Emea, even all of it, and they shall know that I am the Lord. Well, if they're desolate, they're not going to be able to know he's the Lord. He will decimate them, is what he's saying. They had hatred toward Israel. Deuteronomy 2:12. Deuteronomy 2:12. Is showing you attitudes that Edom had toward Israel. Deuteronomy 2:12. The Horams also dwelt in Seir before time. I'm reading out of Old King James. But the children of Esau succeeded them, and when they had destroyed them from before them and dwelt in their stead, as Israel did in the land of his possession, which the Lord had given to them. So they conquered the people who were there, and they dwelt in Mount Seir. Deuteronomy 23, verses 7 and 8, God tells the Israelites they need to be nice to their brother. Unfortunately, it wasn't reciprocal as far as the Edomites were concerned. Deuteronomy 23, verses 7 and 8. You shall not abhor an Edomite, God's counsel is, part of the law. You shall not abhor an Edomite, for he is your brother. You shall not abhor an Egyptian, because you were a stranger in his land. Verse 8, the children that are begotten of them shall enter into your into the congregation of the Lord in their third generation. So you shall allow them to come among you. It's okay. So God was conciliatory toward them. 2 Samuel 8, verses 13 and 14, David ruled Edom. David ruled Edom. He ruled over it. And Psalms 137, verse 7 says, remember Edom in the day of Jerusalem. I'll remember what you did when Jerusalem was falling. I will remember you. And of course, it's talk about slaughter in Edomia, part of the Edom at the end time. That's Isaiah 34, verse 1. And then I say, Ezekiel 25, verses 12 to 14. Will God use Israel to punish, to do the punishing? Will he use Israel to teach Edom a lesson at the end time? And there are indications in Scripture that will do that. I'm going to stop with verse chapter 25, verses 12 to 14, and we'll pick it up next time. All right? Man, have a good rest of the day, and I'll see you this afternoon.